Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Dancer Talks. My name is McCall Sheets, and today we have Kirsten Kemp with us, and she is going to talk to us about her high performance mindset coaching for dancers and artists and her journey. So can you tell me a little bit about your dance journey and how you got to where you are today?
Yeah, for sure. Thank you for having me on. Also, I remember we connected during the pandemic when you put together this really awesome Zoom meeting with all these different people who graduated from different dance programs and various universities. And that's the first time I connected with you. I was so impressed with how you put that together. So I'm excited that we get to reconnect today. A little bit about my dance journey is that I started dancing at a small recreational ballet school in Corpus Christi, Texas, South Texas. That's where I'm from. And it's funny, I started when I was about 6 years old, but I actually didn't like my dance classes very much until I was about 10. And for some reason, I just kept signing up every year. I never had like a stage mom who like made me go to dance or anything. She was just kind of like, hey, if you don't want to go, then just tell me. I'll stop wasting my money on these lessons. But for some reason, every year I just signed up again. And then when I was around 10, I think that's when we started to do more challenging steps. And I was like, oh, wait, if this is what ballet really is, I'm in. This is great. So
me too.
Yeah. Isn't that so funny? Maybe it was because it was too many games and like running around with tambourines. And I just wanted to be serious. I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case. I grew up just really focusing on my love of dance, and I didn't really have, until I was maybe about 12, I didn't even know what a summer intensive was. So needless to say, I didn't even know you could dance professionally, but around the time I was 12, I had a really good friend who learned about the professional world and was very much pursuing it. So I was like, wait, what? You could do this? Okay. By the time I was 14, I went to my first summer program, and I have an identical twin sister. So she and I were doing it together. We both love ballet. And I decided ballet is life. I want to do this professionally. So even though I came from a small school where very few of the dancers were serious and the training was okay, but it definitely wasn't geared towards helping someone get to the professional level. So I was taking every class I could, you know, and in that little environment, what I like to talk about in that phase of my journey is that I had this naive confidence because I was kind of like a big fish in a little pond. And I just remember having thoughts like, what company would I want to dance for? Instead of, oh my gosh, I don't think I'm good enough. Would anyone ever take me? And I just look back on that time in my journey, and I'm so grateful I had that little bubble to begin my dance journey in, because I look at clients I coach now, and some of them are very young. They're maybe 13 years old, and I might be helping them to mentally prepare for something like YGP. And I see all these really serious young dancers exposed to this very curated version of the ballet world through competitions and social media. And I can see how much of a pressure it puts on them and how it also makes them feel like, oh my gosh, everyone out there is so good. How will I ever measure up? So they're already thinking, oh my gosh, will I be good enough? And they're again, like 13 and they don't have that same space to just like love dance and just try and go for it and feel good about themselves. So I'm super grateful I had that. And anyway, by the time I was 17, my parents finally let me and my sister go to a year-round program. We had been begging because I knew that was just something I needed to prepare myself for a company. So I was very fortunate to get accepted to the Houston Ballet Academy, and I danced in the top levels of the school there for 2 years. And that was a really formative experience for me, both technically, artistically, but also personally. And I say that because I really went through some of the best of times and the worst of times. My first year, it was bliss. I was like, just so thrilled to be living my dream and to feel like I was in this little container where I could get great training and I could be pushed. I loved dancing all day. And I just felt like, to some degree, I made it. Maybe I can actually do this. But after my first year, I changed primary teachers, and essentially, without going into it too much, I had a rough relationship with the teacher I was with, often over 6 hours a day. And she was very hard on me. And I think her style might have worked well for some dancers, but for me, I really took some of her harsh criticisms to heart, and it affected me very, very deeply. So I went from feeling like, you know, young Kirsten, naive, full of confidence, just because I didn't know that I should be down on myself. Not that I think dancers should, but a lot of us get that idea young from exposure to other high standards. So all of a sudden I went from that to more insecure and doubtful than I'd ever felt in my life. I was starting to be so stressed out and in my head every time that I would be even taking just daily technique class, that I went from being known as quite a smart dancer, like I could pick up the combinations very quickly, I was focused, I was hardworking, to being so in my head that I would make mistakes left and right because I was in such a state of stress and fear and doubt. And I had so little trust in myself at that point because every single mistake I made, it was like, see, another thing I'm not doing right, another thing I'm not doing right. And so my confidence had really just degraded to this point where I just didn't recognize myself anymore, to be honest. And here I was also looking at my classmates thinking they seem to be handling it just fine. What's wrong with me? Why am I crumbling under this pressure? Why can't I handle it? Something must be wrong with me.
It's always, yeah, it's always other people that you're like, oh, they look so great on the outside. But you don't know, they're probably feeling the same way as you. And and if you take a look back at it now, you'd probably be so impressed with yourself. Like, wow, I'm in the highest level at the Houston Ballet Academy. Wow, I'm doing so great with a really tough teacher. But at the time, you were like, oh, this is difficult. I'm not doing well at all. Letting your mental demons get to you, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm glad you made it out.
Oh, me too. Me too. And actually, it was such an important part in my journey that even though it almost broke me mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically, in all of the ways, it actually really opened me up to so much curiosity about the role our minds have to play in our performance, our well-being, and our success as dancers. So when I graduated from the academy and went to the University of Utah, go Utes, to dance as a ballet major there, I had a complete 180 experience where within a very short amount of time, I think even within my first month of my first semester of college, I was just blown away by the support I was getting. I felt like the environment was safe. Like my professors trusted me. They believed in me. And because my external environment changed, I noticed a very sudden shift in my internal state of being. I started to feel like that smart dancer again. I started to feel like the confident dancer I used to be. And my ability to perform and even my physical well-being, like random injuries and pain I was experiencing all the time, started to just melt away. And I really do think since the stress response in the body and our emotions have so much to do with our ability, our body's ability to repair physically, I think my sudden uptick in mental health and emotional health really had a lot to do with how I was doing physically, even in college. So that really started to plant another seed in my mind of, okay, it's really great that I have all this support from professors and that I'm getting great casting and that my environment is great right now. But I knew from my experience at Houston Ballet that I could not rely on hoping that once I left college and hopefully got into a company, which I ended up doing, I knew I couldn't rely on just hoping that my environment would be perfectly set up to help me feel good about myself and my dancing. I knew I had to build some sort of internal skill set or resilience in order to help my journey be what I wanted it to be. I was tired of giving away my power to a teacher to help me feel or not feel a certain way about myself. So even though at that point I had not read a single self-help book, I had not formally learned pretty much anything about psychology, I was at least just curious, and I was aware that there was something going on in my mind that could either help or hinder me. So fast forward, when I ended up dancing professionally, I was at Oklahoma City Ballet and I had a really great experience there. But long story short, I experienced a knee injury again, but more serious than it ever had been in my first season. So here I was like, yay, I was living the dream. It was awesome. At that point, I had a very empowered state of mind. I was very proactive about being mindful about my perspective, about my responses, taking responsibility for my own viewpoints, way of thinking, positive self-talk. I was super passionate about that at the time, and it was serving me. But when this knee injury came back and it started to just really not look good, like the recovery wasn't going well, I was just trying injections and a procedure and all these things. And I was trying so hard to hold on to this dream to keep dancing. But after a year of struggling, I ended up deciding that, you know, I need to let this go for now. Dance was, I left feeling like dance was still very much in my heart, and I knew I wasn't done. I just knew that I needed to let go of expectations and pressure in order to truly heal. It was actually during the time that I was watching rehearsals and just sitting down while my leg was still healing that I noticed I was starting to look at my peers in a very different light. Instead of seeing them as competitors, I started to just look at what they were actually doing. And at that point, since I hadn't even possessed the strength in my leg to straighten it fully for several months, I could not imagine straightening my knee, much less jumping without pain. And so here I was looking at my peers doing all these things I wanted to do, and I started to see it for what it was, amazing. I was like, what? These dancers are beautiful. They are smart. They are competent. They are doing these superhuman things every day that I also used to do. How dare we ever take that for granted? And I know that an injury sometimes is what's required to have that sort of perspective shift to get you out of the bubble that you're in. But for me, it was just insane that I was seeing my peers in an amazing light, and what I would hear them say when they finished dancing beautifully and they would come to the side of the room after Grand Allegro is, well, that sucked. Or I would see them smack talk themselves constantly, and I knew I used to do that.
Well, okay, why is this so common?
It is, and it drives me crazy.
And why is it so common in the dance world? And to be honest, I haven't seen it as much in any other field that I've been exposed to. And it's crazy because we're so talented and we have so much beauty to give. And we think a lot of people that dance think, dancers, think so low of themselves.
Yes.
It's crazy. And how amazing would it be if they actually were competent, right?
Right.
And had the tools, like what you do, giving them the tools to understand. And I feel like, to be honest, one of the best ways that I've seen many, like me and like what you're saying and other people, how we've leveled up and gotten out of that mind space is to step away because of injury or some other circumstance, maybe COVID or whatever happens. And I don't know. I feel like there are other ways to accomplish this while you're still in that environment.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I agree, which is why I'm passionate about helping dancers who are still in it. I don't want people to have to go through what I went through to have these epiphanies, like my worth is not attached to what I do, or being able to celebrate what we do well. These are things I became vigilant about because I realized how crazy it is that we think so little of ourselves. And I know I just said it's crazy, but it's also understandable to an extent, because if you look at the environments that dancers are trained in, I don't want to sit around and point fingers and say, oh my gosh, the ballet world is so, so, so terrible. I think there's a lot of darkness in it for sure and dysfunction. Absolutely. But let's even think about how we are trained. And I'm not even saying this is wrong. It just gets imbalanced. So from a young age, we're told, we're given corrections all the time. Fix this. Don't do that. Don't do that. Don't do that. And that's not necessarily bad, but it trains our brains from a young age to always look at what is there to fix? What's wrong? What flaws do I need to get rid of? And then if I focus on that enough, I'll get better and I'll be a good dancer. But then what happens when dancers become professionals? They realize they can look at everything that's wrong with them all day and it still doesn't make them a beautiful artist.
Yeah.
Because everyone has flaws. It's not unique, you know?
Yeah. And on it, like growing up, the best thing in the world was to get a correction from that teacher. Mm-hmm. You know, the one that everyone wanted a correction from. And that way you knew that they actually were paying attention to you. Mm-hmm. And so when you get older, I don't know. I think it's like you always want something to correct, like you were saying.
Yeah.
And it's never perfect. Right. And it's kind of tough because it's your career now. It's not just like something that you're striving for. Like you've gotten to the place mm-hmm. that you wanted when you're in a company or dancing professionally. And then it's so hard to be in that space where you're constantly just tearing yourself down at something that you're supposed to love and that you have to do every day to survive.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll say another influence for what causes us to be so hard on ourselves. I want to mention this because I think it will hopefully bring a lot more compassion to ourselves as dancers. Anyone who's listening, I hope this helps you have more compassion and understanding for yourself, which is that as dancers, we often have this extremely high value on excellence and perfection and achievement. That's not necessarily bad. We all logically know that perfection is not possible, but at best, let's say we value excellence. We want to be our very best every single day. And a lot of us have big goals. We want to dance professionally or something like that. Maybe it's not dancing professionally for someone who's listening, but even just performing and they want to do a really good job or they want to perform a higher level role than they ever had before. We have these big goals, and let's especially talk about dancers who want to dance professionally or at least train pre-professionally. We have these big goals and it becomes our life mission. I want to be a professional dancer. So we have a big goal. We have attachment to it. Our identity is wrapped up into it. We have this very narrow singular focus where almost everything we do inside and outside of the studio is geared towards making this thing happen. And guess what? The closer we get to it, the less we feel that goal is within our control to achieve. Naturally, that is a recipe for a lot of psychological and emotional distress because we have this outcome that means so much to us, but we know that our achievement of that thing hinges on, at best, how we perform one day in an audition. And then also, even if we perform our best, it hinges on one or two, three people at the front of the room having a specific opinion about you. And also you better hope that someone who's way, way, way better than you doesn't show up to that audition. So my point is there are a lot of elements that feel outside of our control because they are. And so what drives dancers to be really hard on themselves and perfectionistic is often because those are a coping mechanism to try to get a sense of psychological and emotional safety where there is not, or security where there is not. So we fixate on all the little things that we could be doing better as a way to cope with our fear that it won't happen. I'm wondering if you have found that relatable at all, because that totally explains my life a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I agree so much. I mean, it's crazy how my life has gone from being in, I went to the Ailey School and then trying to find a job. And, you know, right after school, I I go through this in my head a lot, but I always think about how when I was in school, I was like, okay, junior and senior year, those are the only times that I'll be able to audition. I have to be exactly perfect. I have to be an amazing dancer. I have to do this, this, and this to achieve my goal. And then mm-hmm. I'm going to send out all my audition videos. Bam, I'm going to get a job. And that's my only chance. And now it's been many years and COVID happened. No one expected that. That happened the year I was auditioning. So then what? Then my life is completely thrown off the rails. So I had to pivot and everything was out of control. And I was like, oh my gosh, is my dream going to come true? And every day I always think to myself, like, when am I going to achieve my dream? When am I going to achieve the exact dream I had when I was 16? And I realize every day when I ask myself the same question that I am living my dream. And it's different. Like, you can't have, I don't know, I try to live day to day, year to year now, not like making a goal that's from now, that's for next year or 5 years from now. Like, I'm going to do this exactly. Because you can't. There are going to be things that happen. And I don't know, if I still kept and was determined to achieve the same goal I had when I was 16, I don't think that I would be mentally healthy. I think that I would be struggling. I think that I would be trying to fit in this box that doesn't fit me anymore. I've outgrown the box. I am so much more than I was at age 16, and I am a completely different person.
Yeah,
I mean, I kind of look the same, but but I'm so different. I've learned so much even in the past year. So, I always tell myself that, like, okay, you have goals, but you can also pivot. You can also expand. You've outgrown that box. Try this one. You're still living your dream. It's just a little different. And and it doesn't mean that you weren't successful. Like, I know a lot of people that I know, at least, they're like, okay, I'll be successful when I get into a big ballet company, and that's it. And they keep going for this dream. They're like, oh, I just want it. I just want it. And years pass, and, you know, they go through a lot of struggles, and many have like eating disorders and things like that, which I've also struggled with. And it's just, it's hard because you're trying to stay in this specific goal that maybe you need to find your own. You find your own way to achieve it. I know a lot of people in New York who have started their own companies, who are doing freelance work and also do Broadway, who, you know, are singers and are amazing. Or, like, I have a friend who is an opera singer now at Juilliard, and I never knew that she was an opera singer.
Wow.
She wanted to be in a ballet company. And so, like, there are so many things that people can achieve if they just let themselves out of the box.
Yes. What an inspiration. I love that. And for some dancers, the dream they end up living is in alignment with what they thought of for their life at 16. And you also bring up a good point that living out your 16-year-old dream isn't for everyone. And that's not good or bad. You know, it's easy to assign the label of failure to that. And I felt that for a while, that since I felt like my body failed me, here I was finally getting to dance in a company and it was going well and I was having so much joy and fun and I loved it. But ultimately, though I did give up dance for a time, it was returned back to me. And I'm now able to enjoy it in a way that is truly fulfilling for me. And it's personally much healthier for me. However, I do have friends that still have, they're still dancing in the company that we were both in together 7 years ago or something like that. I'm losing count. 6 years ago. And, you know, some of them are happy. Some I'm like, I don't know how happy they are, but, you know, that's not for me to judge. It's for each of us to assess our lives at whatever interval feels appropriate and kind of see, okay, is the direction I'm moving towards, is it feeling expansive for me? Is it feeling like something I truly do want for myself, or am I telling myself I want this and I'm really just afraid to explore anything else because I don't think it will be as good, or I'll feel like a failure or something like that? That was definitely part of the case for me. I knew I wanted to do something more with my life after dance. I did think it would last longer in that specific form of dancing full-time with a professional company, but I'm grateful I got to live other aspects of my life dream earlier in life rather than later. So everyone's path is different, right?
Yeah, totally. Everyone's path is different. And if everyone had the same path, then we wouldn't have all these amazing people, you know? And
yeah,
it's great to learn and grow by learning other people's stories. I mean, that's why I have this podcast. Mm-hmm. So Okay. So I have a question for you. How can dancers start to build confidence, whether it's, you know, going to an audition or feeling confident when they're in the studio, et cetera? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the first thing I like to bring up when I talk about confidence, because it's obviously part of my brand, the confident dancer, is I like to define terms. What actually is confidence and what is it not? So I talk to a lot of high-level professional ballet dancers who have been very established in what they've been doing for a long time. And a lot of them think, I'm pretty confident. You know, I know I have things to offer. You know, I don't really need help with my confidence. And then when I start kind of pulling apart, well, what does being confident mean to you? I see that there's a discrepancy in the actual definition and what they're talking about. I also like to mention there are lots of dancers who come to work with me because they actively know that imposter syndrome or various insecurities, self-doubt, all that is getting in their way of them showing up the way they want to and performing the way they want to. So to define what confidence actually is my favorite definition I have found is that it's just a feeling of being sure about something. Now, to be a confident dancer, that almost assumes that it's become an identity for you. So it's more than just a feeling that comes and goes, because all feelings are temporary experiences, but it's something that you have felt consistently enough to where you feel that it's a part of who you are, or at least your persona as a dancer. So when I talk about what confidence is, and I say that it's just a feeling of being sure about something, then that leads me into what is it not? And there are lots of misconceptions about what confidence is. Some people have the feeling that it is the belief that you are really good, like feeling like you believe in yourself and you're going to achieve all your dreams. Okay, maybe there's truth to that, but that's more of a very specific example of what it actually means to be confident at large. To be confident, since it's a feeling of being sure about something, you can be sure about anything. For some dancers, it is that they really feel they have something to offer, or they feel like, yes, I am a good dancer, or I will make it as a professional, whatever. But that is not an accessible and authentic feeling for a lot of dancers. Some people actually can access the feeling of confidence now by just starting to focus on being sure about what is the next thing I can do to enhance the beauty of my dancing? Or what are some things I can focus on doing in class that I know if I do those things, it brings out my best performance? Maybe it's something as simple as enjoying the feeling of the movement in your body, or focusing on a deep and elastic plié, or something as simple as that. And when I talk about misconceptions, I think a lot of dancers do not feel as confident as they can because they're trying to be sure about something that is not actually something they can be sure about. For example, a lot of us think, I'll be confident when I suddenly one day feel like a good dancer. Okay, well, what does it even mean to be a good dancer? And how would you know? For a lot of dancers, they haven't even asked that question. What does it mean to be a good dancer? Define that, okay? It's going to be mean something different to everybody. And how would you know when someone else tells you? I'm sure lots of people have told you you're a good dancer, but I don't think a lot of dancers take that to heart. So like, what's going to change? Or I'll be confident when I get a professional contract. Interesting. I know a lot of dancers who get that. And guess what? Wherever you go, there you are. All the insecurities still follow you. And now all of a sudden you get the job, but you're afraid of, will I keep the job? So some dancers also feel like if they were to be confident, that would mean they're arrogant. And that's really coming from the misconception that confidence is a feeling that you are better than other people. And unfortunately, a lot of us see that modeled in the behavior of other dancers we don't like. But that doesn't mean we should think that that's all that confidence is, because it's really not. Some of the most beautiful examples I've seen of confidence in dancers I really look up to are examples like Marianela Nunez. I think she's a very confident dancer. We all love her. Oh my gosh, she's the queen. But she's such a good example of humility. She seems very humble, but she has this like gravitas to her, this groundedness and this expansiveness that I think are very characteristic traits of having this solid inner state of confidence that doesn't have to present itself as this loud, proud, look at me, center stage, I'm the best kind of attitude. So confidence can look different on everybody. And all it requires is that you just start to slowly build up a habit of focusing on what you can be sure about and also letting go of what you cannot be sure about. So here's another thing that really stops a lot of dancers from feeling as confident as they want to be. Number one, arbitrary rules. The I will feel confident when fallacy. Chances are, if you are putting this feeling, which pretty much any feeling is something that we can access within ourselves, even through visualization or something that just changes our inner state, even when our external state or circumstances doesn't change or don't change. So when we are like, oh, I will feel confident when, what we do is we're just really not giving ourselves to find our reasons for confidence now. And we're not giving ourselves permission to feel it now. We're putting an arbitrary barrier or rule between us and feeling it. So we're just delaying the feeling. The other thing is that so many dancers don't feel as confident as they could be feeling right now because they are trying to be sure about something, like I mentioned earlier, that they can't be sure about. For example, that other people think they're a great dancer. We can't mind read. And even, you know, I think a lot of dancers have the experience of getting compliments from other people, but for some reason we don't let it sink in, or we're like, oh, they're just trying to be nice, you know?
Yeah. And also, even if you get compliments from other people, if you don't like yourself or have confidence in what you're doing, then it's not going to really hit.
Right.
You know?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So if dancers are trying to, even in a situation like they want to show up confidently for an audition, that's a common situation in which we really think, okay, I want to be confident. I want to go in there and show my best. It would be hard to access the feeling of confidence if what you're trying to be sure about is, I'm going to stand out. I'm going to get the contract. I'm going to be one of the best dancers in there. All those things are pretty outside of your control, but what can you control instead? You can focus on, here are my favorite outstanding qualities about my dancing. Here's how I want to show them. And my goal is simply to share that generously. Those are things that are exactly within your control. It doesn't mean you'll even do it perfectly, but those are things you can focus on that are within your power and control. And by simply shifting that and letting go of what is not within your control, that can help dancers to start to build up that feeling now. Now, there's so much more to it than that. That's really just scratching the surface. But I like to just introduce that concept as often as I can, like, maybe are you not feeling as confident as you can right now because you're trying to get some sort of outcome that's not possible now, or trying to be sure about something that you can't be sure about now, or something along those lines.
Yeah, totally. And speaking of auditions, As someone who has gone to many an audition, it's crazy because, for example, in a Broadway audition or even in an audition where they give you rep, you don't know the combination yeah. or the rep beforehand. And if your sense of confidence is coming from being perfect mm-hmm. and knowing exactly what you're doing, you're probably going to get so in your head and mess up.
Right.
And it's happened to me because I'm like, oh, my goal is just to know the combination. And at the beginning of the audition or right before you do the combination, they usually go, all right, we're looking for someone who can really show us who you are and tell us a story and don't forget to breathe, something along those lines. And then you go out there and you don't breathe. You don't remember the combination because it's not in your body, and you don't show who you are because you're not full of confidence and you're just messing up. So yeah. you just let your mind like screw you up. And if you had confidence in, well, if you use those tricks that you just said and said, okay, well, I have confidence that I am a trained enough dancer and I'm going to enjoy this and focus on one thing like, oh, really? You know, gliding across the floor in that suit new or
yeah.
getting my leg up high and smiling or, you know, dancing to the beat. Maybe yeah. you would show something that's good and catch their eye and get called back or get the job. So right. I think that that's a really good way to, you know, cultivate confidence is by using mm-hmm. the tools you just said.
Yeah. Even if all you have confidence in is that if you make a mistake, you can keep going. At least that yeah. would take some of the edge off of giving so much power to the mistakes. So there are so many different ways we could spin it. And I always work with dancers individually to kind of help see where is the lack of confidence coming from? Like what's holding you back? And we remove those barriers. And then I teach them specific strategies that are very tailored to them to help them gain sustainable and authentic confidence that they can not only build more and more over time, but they can draw upon it at any time. So yeah, there's a lot of ways to go about it, but those are definitely some great ways to start.
Also, I think something relatable, it came to mind when we were chatting earlier, mm-hmm. Is that thing of, oh yeah, I'll be confident when, and in high school and early college, I always thought, oh, I'll be confident when I look this way. Mm-hmm. And so I would say like, oh, if my legs were just a little skinnier and I had more muscular, like if I had a six pack, yeah. then I'll be confident. And it's not going to happen in 1 second. Like when you mm-hmm. get to the audition, you're probably not going to change. Yeah. Like I'm not going to grow 10 inches and become a tall dancer. I'm a right. petite one. So it's not going to change much. And so I think, yes, you have to find confidence elsewhere in other things that you possess, maybe mm-hmm. in how you love the music or how you know that you can always smile and yeah. say, okay, I'm confident in that. Or, oh, I'm confident because I've been training for forever.
Yeah. Totally. It's all about finding what's here and now, because even if you yeah. focus on the six pack thing, sure, let's kind of go along with that and say, ooh, yeah, that would really matter. Even if it did, and even if you could have that, it's not here and now. It could be, but something that could be a source of confidence for you in the moment is something that's more like something you can do now, an artistic ability that you have, or musicality, or an energy that you give off. And with the things that you want to improve, confidence isn't just about putting the blinders on to the things that you want to improve. Confidence actually helps you in the improvement process because it's a state of mind, and it's also a way of thinking where instead of looking at the gap between where you are and where you want to go, you look at the solutions that would fill the gap. And you spend your time acting on those solutions. That's a very confidence building activity and way of being and way of thinking to act on, because instead of just being like, oh man, I want to have that, I want to have this, it's okay, what's important to me about that? And what is the next step I can do to take towards that? Looking at there's this book called The Gap and the Gain. I'm a big fan of, from Dan Sullivan and Benjamin Hardy. And I love the language they put to it, which is, we can constantly look at our goals and our far out future definitions of success and say, okay, I'll be successful when, but one of the best ways to measure success is actually by looking backwards and saying, this is what I've accomplished. This has been tangible success in my life, which is I can now do one more pirouette than I can do last year, or my ability to point my feet fully in potato allegro. I love that. Potato. But yeah, this is something I've actually changed. And then that helps you to feel confident. Like, yes, I've actually made that change. So it gives you more confidence to say, what's the next thing I'm going to do to move forward towards my vision, coming from success, not working for success. That's far out. So I could talk about that for a long time, and like the detriment of just constantly looking at the gap, like, oh, I'm not here yet. I'm not there yet. I need to fix that. There's some validity to that, but we need to spend a lot more time saying, okay, what am I going to do about it? What have I accomplished? How can I use the skills that I have and the skills I've already gained and leverage that to move myself even further?
Totally. Something that helps me a lot is, it's kind of similar. I didn't read that book yet. I'm going to.
It's good.
But I kind of found it in my own mind because I'm very scientific. I love science. Mm-hmm. And I started to think of dance as sort of like a movement science, kind of like physics. And I used to get really frustrated with turns or if something didn't go a certain way. And now when I'm dancing, I'm like, okay, today I didn't hit my triple pirouette, but maybe it was because my shoulder was off. Oh, let me try again. Oh, maybe my knee needs to be more back, blah, blah, blah. So instead of getting frustrated and losing confidence in the fact or saying like, oh, I'm not a turner, I can't turn. I don't even say those words because I feel like that's going to bring me down. Just letting it into the universe, no. So I'm just like, okay, I'm a turner. Let me fix this. Let me find out what's going on. And I look at it through that way. And then if my friends are coming up to me and being like, ah, I can't turn, I suck, you know, the usual, then I'll say, okay, let's look at it. Let's analyze it. Maybe even take a video, figure out what you're doing with your arms, all this situation, and then say, okay, now try again. Oh, there you go. It's working.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's not even, you play games in your mind so much, and it's not even that. It's literally physics.
Mm-hmm. That's what I think. Not personal.
Yeah, it's not like, oh, you suck. Like, this is just not for you. No, no, no. Get that out of your mind right now.
Yes, thank you.
Someone probably told you that. Someone probably said that to you. Get it out and become yourself again. Get back into your zone and find out what is actually causing that issue.
Yeah.
And you can solve it.
Yeah, a solution-oriented focus.
Yeah, as a personal trainer, that's what I do with my clients, because they'll come in and be like, oh, my leg isn't high enough in arabesque. I just must not be a good dancer. I'm like, let's stop this. We're going to work on some exercises to strengthen that muscle, because it's a little weak because you're very flexible but not strong. And then we started.
The classic fixed mindset.
Yeah. And then you become better because you're not focusing on the emotional side of it, which there is an emotional side that's good for dance, like to tell stories and stuff. But I feel like sometimes emotions that are very strong are not super productive when you're trying to focus on technique and actually getting through your day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. There's a lot of good insights there.
That's just what I think. Just my opinion.
It sounds like you're talking about solution-oriented focus and essentially the growth mindset instead of the fixed mindset, which is very fixated on creating labels and deciding, am I good or bad at this, based off of small subset of information or just whatever your past has been. Maybe it's been years of information of you stumbling out of your double pirouettes. That still doesn't dictate your future with your turns. And so the more we put ourselves in boxes and give ourselves labels like, oh, this hasn't happened, I'm not good at this, or I'm not a natural jumper, turner, I'm not this kind of dancer. For me, it was, I'm never the favorite, which was completely a limiting belief that I just decided was true. Because if I had actually taken time at that point in my journey to say, wait, what are some examples in my life where I actually have been the favorite? I would have had multiple examples and pieces of evidence to dwell on to the contrary, but my mind was just set at that point when I was younger on, no, this is true, because it was something that I felt was true at the time. So it's very important. A big thing that I work on with a lot of dancers is uncovering the beliefs that have been limiting them and changing those to be more empowering. When we have empowering belief systems that are in line with reality, which reality is kind of a tricky word because a lot of dancers use the term, oh, I want to be realistic. And what they really are doing is they're limiting themselves. We're wanting to avoid the sting of disappointment if we did hope, if we did give ourselves the benefit of the doubt, if we believed. And so we say, oh, I want to be realistic. But when we develop belief systems that are actually what I would call realistic, which is in line with the reality that with time, effort, intention, and new resources, people can change, that your way of thinking is not fixed, that all thoughts are not facts, that a new perspective is always available, that, you know, change is always possible. Change is always happening anyway. So if we stay stuck in our old belief systems, like, oh, I'm just not this, I can't do this because of this proof that I've gotten in my past that that's true. It's like, well, if those belief systems are causing you to not only feel discouraged, but preventing you from taking empowered action, then we can change that. And it's amazing how dancers' performance and their experience, their confidence, their satisfaction, how that changes just when we start to change their belief systems.
It's so true. That is such golden information. It's just life-changing when someone can realize that they don't have to limit themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
For sure.
And I feel like most people say realistic as in the general population, realistic as in, okay, what are the skills and what can I do to, I don't know, make the most money and be safe. And that's it. Be safe and be average and whatever. But as artists, I think we can be realistic, but we can also be thinking outside the box and saying, okay, what if? And can I create my own opportunity from this?
Yeah.
Even if this doesn't work out, what else can I do to leverage my career and enjoy my time as I have it?
Right. I think if pretty much anyone in the dance world was realistic from a young age, when, you know, in the way that most people define that, which is like, okay, I don't want to hope too big. I don't want to shoot for something that's not actually going to be possible for me. I don't want to waste my time and energy. It's how a lot of dancers think about it deep down. So if a lot of dancers who we look up to in the industry were realistic, quote unquote, realistic too early, they probably wouldn't have reached the heights that they've reached now. And especially the dancers that we really look at and we're like, oh my gosh, it's so inspiring how far they've made it, you know. Dancers who have overcome some sort of adversity or, you know, injury or whatever it was, I think if they were realistic, then they wouldn't have created the reality that they're living in now. I know I certainly would not have. Because one of my big things, one of my doubts or fears when I started my coaching business was at the time, right before I started coaching, I didn't even really know that coaching was a thing. I had never heard of anyone doing something like this with ballet or dancers specifically. Now I don't just work with ballet dancers. I work with dancers from all sorts of genres. But I was thinking, oh, I haven't seen this before. who's going to take this seriously? You know, I'm not a sports psychologist or a therapist. So like, is anyone going to take me seriously? Would anyone pay me to do this? Those doubts were definitely things that I experienced, but thank God I was willing to take action to see before I drew the conclusion. And I'm amazed the career I've been able to build that previously little me like 6 years ago would not have thought was possible, but I hoped. Totally. So yeah, don't limit yourself, anybody who's listening, in the name of being realistic.
Even a great example is Wendy Whalen. I love her so much. She's the director of New York City Ballet, and she has this documentary on how she had to get surgery. Yep. And if she was realistic, she wouldn't have said, I'm going to be doing a performance when I get better from my injury. Oh, and then I'm going to be doing this and that and this. And she performed for so long, even though she had this hip surgery. And then now she's the director of the company she was in. And she's so fabulous. And I love how she just doesn't let anything stop her. And I think that is, she's a great example of how dancers should be. You know, thinking outside the box.
Right.
Today I'm really thinking about boxes. Maybe because I'm looking at the the podcast box.
Right. That's funny. Oh, Wendy, what an icon.
Yeah. Well, all right. Well, thank you so much for joining me on this podcast. I feel like we chatted so much and I learned so much about you and about your whole entire journey and how you coach dancers and everything in between. So where can people find you and how can they get in touch with you and, you know, coach with you and all of that?
Yeah, thank you. This has been super fun. So basically, I'm the confident dancer everywhere on the internet. So on Instagram, I'm Kirsten_theconfidentdancer. You could probably just search The Confident Dancer and I'll pop up. I'm also on YouTube, The Confident Dancer YouTube channel. I also have my videos on in podcast form as well. So if you prefer to listen, The Confident Dancer podcast. And if anyone is interested in seeing if individual mindset coaching is a good fit, I definitely specialize in helping dancers overcome common mental blocks like performance anxiety, self-doubt, low self-confidence, you know, finding themselves holding back because maybe of the stress or pressure they feel or not believing in themselves, all sorts of mental challenges like that. So if any dancers listening are like, yes, that's been affecting me and I don't want it to affect me anymore, that's definitely something I can help with. So dancers can go to kirstenkemp.com or theconfidentdancer.com. Both lead to the same place. And you can learn more about my services and book a free 30-minute consultation. So I always offer that because I want dancers to be able to connect with me and kind of see how I work. We could discuss their goals and challenges, and I can make a personal recommendation. Like, yes, I think this is a fit for you, or I'm always honest if not. So it's definitely like a no strings attached situation if any dancers just want to see if that would be a fit.
Well, awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I hope that all the listeners find what they need. And I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. You can find me at dancertalks.com and dancertalks on Instagram. And I'll see you on the next episode. Bye.
Thanks, Nicole. Bye.